Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Kuf Nun Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. Before we begin our daf of Masechet Shabbos, just a couple of brief reminders. We've been mentioning in the last couple of dafim, being that we're approaching Masechet Erevin in the context of our daf Yomi Gemara Marking Shiur, we highly recommend, number one, getting a hold of the book of illustrations and diagrams that accompanies the entire Masechta, Maseches Erevin. The book is entitled Pirush Chai, authored or illustrated by Rav Chaim Porush. A second point, and we highly recommend that anyone who has the opportunity and the ability to prepare the Mishnayos of Maseches Erevin, before learning the Masechta, one will find it to be very beneficial and serves as a great basis for, approaching a topic that in general we have little contact with, little exposure to. And as we said, the preparation of the Mishnayos of the entire Masechta before actually learning it would be of great benefit. It's true that those who are learning Daf Yomi, and here we are at Daf Kuf Nun Hey, that leaves very little time for such a project, but as the old saying goes, better late than never. With that in mind, we now turn to our Daf Kuf Nun Hey. You'll find the upper third of the page a new Mishnah with which we will begin today's shiur. But before we actually learn the Mishnah, let us glance at the side of the Gemara where we have a nosei, a topic heading, where we've written Tikkun Mozon Lebehemot, the preparation of food for animals. Ma Mutar B'Shabbos. What can one do in this area for the benefit of animals? And generally speaking, we're talking about animals that are domesticated or they are under your control. They are your possessions. You own them. This is in distinction to animals that live in the wild that one is not allowed to tend to any of their food needs on Shabbos. And that would include feeding the pigeons in the public park or throwing peanuts to squirrels, etc., when it comes to Shabbos. However, animals that are under your control, that you own, you have an obligation to tend to their needs. And here the question is, how much is one allowed to trouble himself with regard to the animals? So, point number one, l'troach b'davar shikvar mazon, avolo l'shavi ochlin, is the heter, the permission, or the that which is allowed. Does that mean that I can trouble myself with regard to that which is already edible and classified as animal feed, but I would not be allowed to take something that is currently not edible by the animal and make it into food? That's the shaviochon oi, or possibly the opposite, that if it's a question of taking something that's currently not edible for the animal and prepare it in such a way that the animal would be able to eat it, that might be allowed. However, something that is already edible for the animal, and it's just a question of making it a little more pleasant for the animal, which we'll call tircha, maybe that is what is not allowed. Those are very general guidelines for approaching this sukkah. There will be many, many details in the sukkah, many terms, many verbs, and we will deal with them as we go along. Let's now take a look at the Mishnah. Matirin Pekiei Omir Lifnei Behema. Matirin is to untie. Pekiei Omir is are bundles of straw that are tied together. So you can untie them for the animal. U mefasfesin es hakifin, aval loy es hazirin. Mefasfesin has to do with spreading out, scattering, spreading out grasses for animal feed. Rashi explains that when you have, let's say, compacted grasses in a box or stored somewhere in a tight fashion, so they heat up and the animal doesn't sense the scent that it causes, and therefore the animal will find it repelling. Therefore, the mefasfesin makes it more attractive for the animal. Avol lo es hazirin. This we'll have to see more about in the Gemara. Ein miraskin loy es hashachas v'lo es hacharuvin lifnei behemo. Miraskin is to crush. One is not allowed to crush. The shachas is are grains, but not fully developed. In other words, they're grains that as they sprout and grow a little bit before they develop fully, they're cut or harvested for animal feed. So one is not allowed to crush the shachas because that is simple tircha, that's unnecessary. The animal will eat it even without it being crushed. And charuvin is often translated as the word sounds into English, we would say carob. But whatever the case is, the charuvin also are not to be crushed. Bein dako, bein gasa. Whether it's an animal that's small, generally speaking, a behemoth dako includes animals that are like sheep and goats. But in this case, we're going to assume that dako will include also animals that are young. It might be a calf, for example. And bein gasa would be large animals. So the Mishnah is telling us not to murasik shachas and tvua, whether in front of a behemoth, whether it's a daka or a gasa. Rav Yehuda matir becharuvin ledaka. Rav Yehuda has a leniency with regard to the charuvin for an animal that is a daka. Rashi says sheshineho dakois v'koshin lo. It has very fine teeth, and the charuvin would be difficult for it to eat as in a whole fashion. As we said, we gave a very general type of explanation to the Mishnah. The Gemara will get into extensive detail. Before we continue in the Gemara itself, we notice immediately quite a bit of markings, symbols that need explanation. On the side of the Gemara, we provide a chart, the two columns, Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, with that running down the side, three entries. This chart will be of benefit once we go into the Gemara. Once we finish the Sugya, the chart can serve as a good review. Under the Mivneh heading that you notice on the side, you can see we have a bow tie feature, and they represent Shnei Shitos. There are two opinions, L'shavya Uchla Oy L'troach. This ties into what we noted in our introduction. The two approaches, what is allowed? Are we allowing making something into food or tircha over food? And that's, as we say, Rav Huna has an approach. And in the Gemara, we will see later a double underline which highlights what is the reason for each shita. So when we get to Rav Huna and the question what is his basis, the Gemara will reveal to us he holds you're allowed to batshriach over ochel, but not make something into ochel. And the opposite is true with regard to Rav Yehuda, and we will notice that also when we get to the double underline. But before that, after the bow tie, which introduces these two general approaches, we can call them two opposite approaches, the diamond appears, and under our Mivneh heading, we note Havonas HaMishnah Lefi Shnei Hadeos. After we see Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, each one of them will then present their approach to the Mishnah. In other words, we will have a frame. You can see this by just glancing in the Gemara. There's a diamond around the Hochikamar, means this is how they understand the Mishnah. And the frame is basically a restatement of the Mishnah according to each one of their opinions. And following each presentation of the Mishnah, according to Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, the Gemara will ask, and this is where the double underline comes in, what is the maitaima? What is the reason for Rav Huna and for Rav Yehuda? Let's now turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav Huna, hein hein pekin, hein hein kifin. In the Mishnah we saw these terms. We've underlined them in the Mishnah, making it easier to find. The Pekiei Omir and the Kifin are one in the same. Bear in mind, this is Rav Huna's approach. When we get to Rav Yehuda, if you skip down for a minute, we're doing this just to emphasize the structure. When you get to Rav Yehuda, he says, Hein Hein Pekiyin, Hein Hein Zirin. Zirin were mentioned in the Mishnah. And so that Rav Yehuda aligns Pekiyin with Zirin, whereas Rav Huna aligns Pekiyin with Kifin. I hope that this is not too confusing. There are many factors and variables in this Gemara. That's why having one finger on the chart might also be of some assistance as we go along. So Rav Huna says that Pekin and Kifin are one and the same in the sense that they both describe, or they both represent bundles of tied straw. Pekin equals tray, kifin equals tlosa. That means that in the case of pekin, it is bound at two points. In other words, there's a rope that ties together the bale, or the bale of hay or straw, and I think you can imagine just stalks of straw. In the case of pekin, there are two knots that run around them. In the case of Kifin, three. Two at both ends and one across the middle. Zirin, what is that? That's the Arzi. That means it's a reference to fresh Erez tree branches. An Erez, Arzi, Erez, is a type of tree. And the reference here is their branches. In the Gemara, in the Rashi, that is, Anof, he says, Zirin da'arza, Anofim lachin shel erez. They're fresh branches of an erez tree, maybe fresh shoots of an erez tree, and when they are still lach, when they're still fresh, literally lach is damp, it means they're still green and fresh, they are fit for an animal. The Rashi points out very importantly that most people don't use these Erez branches for animal feed, but rather they leave it aside for fuel, for wood purposes. Wood is essentially for fuel purposes. So first Rav Huna takes the three expressions in the Mishnah, Pekiei Omir, Kifin, and Zirin, those points that we underlined, and he explains what they are. And now he reads the Mishnah with this in mind, V'hochi ka'omar. And thusly, we are to understand the Mishnah. Matirin Pekiei Omir, Lifnei Behema, U'mefasfasin, the Pekiei Omir, which were bundles of straw with two ropes around them, two ropes, and we'll refer to them as two knots around them. They can be undone in front of a behemoth, and mefasfasin, they can be scattered also. And the reason for this is, since it originally was already food, and when it was in a bundle, it was already food. It was just bundled food. But what we are allowing you to do is to make it more pleasant for the animal to eat it, which we call tircha. You're investing efforts over that which is already food. Fuhu hadin l'kifin, and likewise with regard to the kifin, which have three knots around them. Avoloi es hazirin, lo lefasveis velo lehatir. When it comes to these erez branches, they don't start off as food. As Rashi pointed out, we emphasize that basically people leave that aside as fuel. So it doesn't, it's not there for food purposes. And now, on Shabbos, you want to present it to the animal as food. That's called making it into food. And as Rashi says, we have a double star. You might notice the second to last narrow line. Rashi says, "Avolo es hazirin lo lefaseis v'lahatir," not to scatter and not to undo bundles of them, of the erez branches. The kevon de meikoros damayu lav uchlo, since at the beginning they were not designed as animal feed. V'hashtehu de mashkilu uchlo, now he's making it into food. Havilei olode uchlo b'lon Shabbos. It's a creation of food. And the term olode reminds us of the term nolad, which we associate often with the term muktza, and hence we appreciate that making something anew on Shabbos is not allowed. So that's why in this reading of the Mishnah, according to Rav Huna, when the Mishnah says Avolo es hazirin, it's a reference to the anfei erez and making them into food, and therefore you're not allowed to deal with it. You're not allowed to scatter them, and not allowed to untie bundles of it. Omar Rav Chisda, my time as Rav Huna. What is the basis of Rav Huna? What's his reasoning? Kosovar, the answer is he holds the mitzvah buchla tarchinon, to trouble yourself over that which is already food is allowed. But to make something into food that wasn't originally considered food, one is not allowed to do that. It's called olode ochla. Rav Yehuda Omar, hein hein pkiin, hein hein zirin. Rav Yehuda, looking at these expressions in the Mishnah, he says that pkiin and zirin are essentially the same. Notice the change. The zirin, according to Rav Yehuda, is something very different than the way Rav Huna looked at it. So the pekiyin is tray, and zirin is tlosa. Pekiyin is pekiyin is two knots, and zirin is three. They are both bundles of straw. And kifin is, according to Rav Yehuda, kifin de arzi. That's the erez branches. The hochi ka'omar. And thusly, Rav Yehuda understands the Mishnah. Matirin p'kiei omir lifnei behema. You can untie the bundles of straw. He is of the opinion that as long as they are tied up, they are not edible. The animal won't eat from it. So the untying of it makes it into food. And we allow this because, as Rashi says, because of the tsar of the name, of the pain experienced by the animal in not having access to the food when it's in this bundled form. So that we allow, the undoing of the Pkiya Omer, but to scatter it, to make it more pleasant for them, that just increase pleasure of the animal, that we don't allow. The Kifin, when it comes to the Anfei Erez, these Erez branches, Pifisfusi Nami Mifasfisinon, we allow the scattering of that. Because in the case of the erez branches, without the spreading out of it, it's not considered oichel. It's not, the animal won't eat from it. Avol loy es v'avoloi hazirin lefasfes elo lahatir. When the Mishnah says lo es hazirin, that's going on the fisfus, the scattering out. The scattering out of the zirin, which were the three knotted bundles, we don't allow, but untying we will allow. Omar Rava, my time of Rav Yehuda. What is the basis of Rav Yehuda? What is the underlying logic behind his way of looking at the Mishnah? Answer, Kosovar, he holds, Shavya Uchla Mashvinon, to make something into food for an animal on Shabbos, we allow that. Mitzrach be'uchlo lo tarchinan. But to trouble yourself over making it, to making it more pleasant for the animal, that we don't allow. So, as we have come to this point, I hope it's clear, Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda both have their unique, their own approaches to the Mishnah, with their very different svoras. Rav Chisda says we allow you simply to toreach over, to trouble yourself over something that's already food, but to make something into food, no. And Rav Yehuda holds the opposite, that to make something from non-food into food for the animal we allow, but troubling yourself to increase the pleasure of something that's already food for the animal, that we do not allow. If we glance at the chart, so that you can always keep track of things in a chart form, you will see that we have across the chart, we're looking at the chart on the side of the Gemara, you can see the series of the grid, if you will. Across the top, you have Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, and down the side, we have Ki Omer, Kifin, and Zirin. What does each one, how does each one explain? So if you look under Rav Huna, he explains that Ki Omer was a double knotted bundle. Whereas Rav Yehuda, we should say, and Rav Yehuda says the same thing. There you, that helps very much, as we've said in many shiurim, that when you can reduce the number of variables over which there's controversy, it makes the sukkah much easier. So here, we can, as far as Pki Omer is concerned and its description, there's agreement on that. Now the controversy starts. When you get to the kifin, according to Rav Huna, the kifin was a three-knotted bundle of straw, and according to Rav Yehuda, kifin were the anfei erez. And with regard to the zirin, you notice just the opposite. You can see that clearly on the chart. Now we have triangles. They need to be explained on the side under our Mivne heading. We will notice in the sugya triangles in two directions. These are kushios mimakoros al pirushim o'elu. We will be asking questions from sources on the explanations that we have received till now. Sources that will indicate, of course, challenging at some point Rav Huna, and at other points Rav Yehuda. The house form that we have is here to represent siyum hakushya, the end of the question. So that structurally, we will see a triangle, which introduces a challenge. And then, if you just take a look for a moment, on the second wide line of the Gemara, you notice a triangle. So there's a question. And two lines later, it culminates with Utyufta de Rav Huna. So we realize that this section of the Gemara will be challenging Rav Huna. There's another triangle in the same position that appears, which we already understand that's also going to be a challenge to Rav Huna. The Gemara doesn't use the expression Tufta de Rav Huna, so we don't have a house marking there. However, later, at the bottom line, you'll see an inverted triangle, and this will eventually take us to the top of Amud Beis, and you will notice there, four lines from the top, an expression Utyufta de Rav Yehuda. So the structure is mapped out, I hope, very clearly, so that we can free our minds up to focusing on the details. We continue our Gemara on the second wide line in the middle. Tanan, a triangle pointing up. We know already this is going to be a kasha and Rav Huna. So what did Rav Huna say? Rav Huna said that we allow tircha ba'oichel, but we don't allow the making of something into oichel. Tanan, ein raskin es hashachas v'secharuvin lifnei behemo bein dako bein gasa. We hope this is familiar. This is a quote from our Mishnah. And it says, you don't crush a shachas nor charuvin in front of a behema, whether it's a daka or a gasa, a small or large animal. My love, charuvin dumya de shachas. Are we not to understand that the charuvin featured in the Mishnah are like shachas? We explain shachas is grain that is harvested before it matures and it's harvested for animal feed. So charuvin are taught in the same context. So is it not so then? Therefore, ma shachas derechichi, just like the shachas is soft, af charuvin derechichi, so too the charuvin described here are soft. Now, as such, they're soft. An animal will be able to eat it even without it being crushed, and yet. And even so, you're not allowed to crush it. Alma, what does that show us? Lo tarchinon beuchla. Being that we're making this assumption, of course, that the charuvin are like the shachas; they are both soft. Hence, the animal, as they are, can eat them. And the Mishnah is telling you, you cannot crush them. That would be simply increasing the pleasure of the animal. That we refer to that as tircha. So, alma lo tarchin and buchlo. We're not allowing you to do that. Utyufta de Rav Huna. This would be then a challenge to Rav Huna's position. He said that tircha buchlo is allowed. We've used a lot of markings here to make sure things are clear. Some people might say we are guilty of overkill, but take a look. You see the arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. And align this with the arrow you see above. Just skim up. What if we dot, we dashed underline of the above, lemitrach buchla tarchinon. What if we marked here? Lo tarchinon buchla. So you see immediately the contrast or the challenge to Rav Huna. We continue. Omar loch Rav Huna, loy. Rav Huna response is not so. The assumption in developing the question is simply wrong. Shachas dumya de charuvin. Rather, we should look at it as follows. The shachas is similar to charuvin. Charuvin, if you were to stop someone in the street and ask them what is their impression of a charuv, it's generally speaking, it's a hard type of, we'll call it a hard fruit. So that Rav Huna is saying that the Mishnah that aligns or parallels the shachas to the charuvin, it's really the shachas that's similar to the charuvin. Ma charuvin da akushi, just like charuvin are generally speaking hard, akushi, or kosher, hard, af shachas da akushi, so too the shachas here is hard. Now, well, but didn't we say they're freshly hard, their grains harvested early? Yeah, but in this case, they were left to dry. So even though you harvested the grains prematurely for animal feed, they were left to dry, so they become hard. And the Mishnah says that ein maraskin es ha shachas es haruven lefei behemo. You're not allowed to crush them. Now, hechi mishkachas lo beili zutri. Let's take a look at the Rashi. You'll find the Rashi in the wide lines where it says be'ili zutri ayorim tanim, young donkeys, sha'af hashachas koshe lohem. The shachas is hard for them to eat. Utsricho risuk l'shavya uchlan, and it requires crushing to make it into food. Aha! And of course, Rav Huna is consistent with his point that Rav Huna says you're not allowed to make something into oichel. So, in terms of the Mishnah, which says you're not allowed to crush shachas nor charuvin, we're talking about hardened shachas, just like charuvin are hard. And in the case of the Ili Zutri, the young donkeys, the young donkey is incapable of eating the dry shachas. But what can you do? We're not allowed to make it into something that will now be edible. That's called l'shav y'uchla. And Rav Huna says that is what's not allowed, and that's how he understands the Mishnah, which the Mishnah that said ein maras, you're not allowed to crush the shachas nor the charuvin. Because for the Ili Zutri, that would be, in effect, making it into food. Toshma. Again, the triangle represents an anticipated question on Rav Huna. The Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda matir b'charuvin l'daka. We should also point out that this question lasts a number of lines, and that's indicated by the long question marking you can see on the side of the Gemara text. Rav Yehuda says he once allowed to crush the charuvin ledaka, and we are medayek here that we infer ledaka in legasalo. Rav Yehuda is saying that the allowance is for a daka, which we are taking to mean a young animal, but not for a large animal. E amris bishlmo tanakamo savar mitrach beuchlo lo tarchinon shavya mashvinon. If you will learn, unlike Rav Huna, that the Tanakama is of the opinion that you're not allowed to matriach over ochel, but you're allowed to make something into ochel. Hainu de ko'oma Rav Yehuda. With that in mind, we appreciate Rav Yehuda's reaction in the Mishnah. Charuvin ledako nami shavya uchlehu. The charuvin for a daka would be making it into food, and that is allowed. That where the Tanakama tells us we're not allowing you to crush the shachas and charuvin for a daka or a gasa, because that is simple troubling over food, which is something that it's already edible for animals. So something that's already edible for animals, the Tanakama says you're not allowed to trouble yourself over it, like Rav Yehuda said, unlike Rav Yehuna. And the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, don't confuse him with the Amora that is the second bow tie, the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda says that I understand you are objecting to Tircha over Ochla, but you should be aware, says the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, that crushing Charuvin for Adaka is making it into Ochel. And making into Ochel is something that we agree is allowed. That whole approach, of course, is not like Rav Huna. Eloi Amris. But if you're going to go like Rav Huna in understanding things, Tanakama Sovar, Shavya Uchla Lo Mashvinon, that you're not allowed to make something into Uchla according to Rav Huna, Mitrach Beuchla Mashvinon, but to trouble yourself over something that already is food, we allow you to make it a little better. Well, then I don't understand the Tana Rebbe Yehuda in the Mishnah. Rebbe Yehuda, Matir Becharuvin Ledaka, Kol Shekein Legasa. Why would Rebbe Yehuda, in his statement, leave us with room for inferring something that would be inaccurate? Because if you're saying that the Tanoim hold you can trouble yourself over food, in other words, as long as it's not making it into food, but troubling yourself is allowed. Well, if you're going to crush the charuvin for the daka, you certainly would be able to do it for the gasa, because in the case of the gasa, it already is edible, and we are allowing something that is tircha oriented and just increasing it. In the case of the gasa, it's more prominent that that's what's happening. That it's a case of non shavya uchlo, but merely tircha ba'uchel. So according to Rav Huna's approach, we won't understand the Mishnah part, or focusing primarily on Rebbe, we won't understand Rebbe Yehuda, because as things are, we are left with room for inferring that the heter is only for a daka, not for a gasa. But according to Rav Huna, all the more so we would be lenient with regard to the gasa, because the charuvin, even without crushing them, are already food, and just to crush them is simply tircha to making it all the more pleasant for the animal when you're dealing with a gasa. Rav Huna responds. Mi savris daka daka mamish. Are you assuming that the term daka in the Mishnah is what we thought, a small animal? My daka, you know what the word daka means? It means gasa. It really means a large animal. So Rabbi Yehuda was matir, charuvin ledaka really means that Rabbi Yehuda allows crushing of charuvin for a large animal. Amai kori lo daka. Why is the large animal called by this funny term daka? The daika beuchla. It means it crushes with its teeth. When it chews it and crushes it, which is, the word daka has a different connotation altogether. It can mean also to crush. So, ironically, the term daka is a reference to a large animal. And then the heter of Rabino will make a lot of sense, according to Rav Huna, that we allow the crushing of the charuvin for the large animal, because that's a function of making it a little more pleasant. The Gemara asks, how can you use this pshat, though? How can you accept that explanation? Homi de gotoni resha. From the fact that the resha, the Tanakama, said, bein daka ubein gasa, he used the term daka in contrast to gasa, and Rav Yehuda was responding to the Tanakama, mechlal de Rav Yehuda, daka equals daka mamish koma, that daka meant a small animal. And with that, then, once again, we're led to the inference that the allowance would be for the small animal and not for the large animal. And if you were learning like Rav Huna, the allowance should be all the more so for the large animal, because it's there, it's just a function of tircha b'oichlin. Well, this is kasha, this is then left as a difficulty. The term kasha throughout the Shas, generally speaking, it represents a textual difficulty, but it doesn't represent a total repudiation of that opinion. So we say at this point in the Gemara, Rav Huna has his opinion. It's not smooth with regard to how to understand or how to read the Mishnah within the context of the Tana, Rebbe, Yehuda. So be it. We continue. Toshma. Now, the inverted triangle already warns you alerts you that to the question now being asked in the opposite direction, meaning we're going to be challenging Rav Yehuda's approach, the Amora, the second bow tie, Rav Yehuda and his approach. What was his approach? He was saying that the heter in the Mishnah is l'shav yochel, to make something into ochlin, but l'troach over ochlin, no. So let's see. Toshma mechatchin. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Es hadluin lifnei habehemo ves hanavelo lifnei haklovim. One is allowed to cut up. Dluin is a type of vegetation. It's, of course, they are detached, as Rashi says. And these dluin is a type of vegetation. We don't have to commit ourselves to any translation at this point. Simply recognizing it's a type of vegetation, and that's allowed to be cut up for animals. And the nevela is a carcass of a dead animal can be cut up for your dogs. My lav dluin dumia de nevela. Are we not to understand that the dluin, in a sense of taught together with the nevela, that they are similar to the nevela? In what sense? Ma nevela derechiki. Just like a carcass is something that's soft, af dluin derechiki. So too, the dluin featured in this source are soft. They're, meaning they're already edible. So what are you cutting them up for in front of the behema? Yeah, you're making it more pleasant for the animal. Almo tarchinon beuchla. So we see that you're allowed to matriach over ochel, to trouble yourself to improve that which is already ochel utyufta de Rav Yehuda. And this is counter to Rav Yehuda's approach. Omar loch Rav Yehuda, loy. The assumption in the question is incorrect, but rather, nevela dumio de deluin, in the other direction. The nevela featured in this source is similar to deluin. And once again, like we saw before, if you were to stop someone in the street and ask them how do they see dluin, they would perceive it as a hard, a firm type of vegetation. So, in this context, the nevela is really to be parallel to the dluin. Ma dluin de ashuni. De ashuni means hard. Af nevela de ashuni. So to the nevela is hard. Ve hechi mishkachas lo. How do you have a situation, or how would you describe a hard carcass? What is that? Answer: the basar pili. It's basar. It's meat that has become so hard that cracks are developing in it, and therefore, without cutting it up, the animal won't be able to eat it. So, once again, Rav Yehuda, we see Shitas Rav Yehuda in his defense of his position is that we are making it into ochel and not not being toreach over ochel. Inami, another explanation of the nevela lefnei haklovim is buguraisa zutri. It could be that the nevela is soft. However, we're talking about puppies, that even that all meat is hard for them to eat, and therefore cutting up for the puppies is making it into food, even if the nevela happens to be soft. Tong shma. The Toni Rav Chonon Minahardo. Again, the inverted triangle indicates we'll be challenging the opinion of Rav Yehuda, that second bow tie. We're challenging the opinion that says you are not allowed to be toreach over ochel. What does it say here? Mefarchinon teven v'aspasto u'ma'arvin. Mefarchin is understood, generally speaking, as crushing something. So we're crushing Tevin and Aspasta. We saw Aspasta, by the way, was the shachas, that it was the grains that were harvested before they developed completely. And this is something that it's a type of an animal delicacy. So the this source is telling us, as Rashi explains, Uma'arvin hateven vaspasta yachad. After crushing the straw, it's mixed together with the aspasta. We crush the straw and the aspasta, and v'habehemo echilas hateven b'shul aspasta. The animal end up eating the straw because there is aspasta mixed together with it. What are we describing over here? Almo. Tarchinon beuchla. What we are describing is someone that's making it more more pleasant, more attractive for the animal. So, because the tevin and the aspasta, the animal would eat even without it being crushed. But what he's doing here is he's crushing it and mixing it together to make it more attractive to the animal. Well, that's allowed on Shabbos. That's called tirch beuchla. It's against Rav Yehuda. The Gemara says, no, that is not, that's not the pshat over here, but rather, tevin is betivno saria. You're dealing with rotting straw. It's partially rotting, it's not completely rotting, because if it was completely rotted, it wouldn't be given to animals, it would be used in the making of cement. But it's partially rotting, and the aspasta the need for crushing it and mixing it is because Be'ili Zutru, we're talking about the young donkeys, that without this preparation, the animal is incapable of eating it. And therefore, what we are really describing is making it into food as opposed to merely troubling yourself over it. We continue with the Mishnah. On the side, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. When you look at the Mishnah, we have a trapezoid form. And just take a brief look at the Mishnah, you see Gomol, Agolim, and Tarnagolim are highlighted with these are the three different kinds of animals: camels, calves, and chickens. And we have a numbering system, 1 through 3. This highlights Eif Ma'achilin Oifel Lebehemus Voifus B'Shabbos. The how does one feed? Not the what does one feed, but how, process-wise, manually speaking. How do you feed the animals? A second point that will appear in the Mishnah deals with liquids, nesinas mayim b'fnei balei chai shonim, the presenting of water to animals. That's in our markings, we're presenting this as a separate section of the Mishnah. Hence, we aren't continuing any numbering or shapes regarding the mayim section of the Mishnah. So now the Mishnah. Ein oivsin es hagomol velo dorsin avol mal'itin. The Gemara will ask, what do these expressions mean? So we'll wait till we get to that point in the Gemara. But superficially, we can say that when it says ein oivsin is a function of giving an animal a lot to eat. So it's like a forced feeding. So that we do not do that on Shabbos. We don't feed the gomel in that way. Velo dorsin avol mal'itin. The ein ma'amirin eso agolim avol mal'itin. Ma'amirin is not allowed. And Rashi will tell you, just wait for the Gemara, but you are mal'itin. Umahalkitin litarne goylim. V'noistin mayim lemursun avolo goylin. Mahalkitin is another method of feeding that you're allowed to do. And you're allowed to add water to mursun. Mursun is, we'll call it bran. And that's what is allowed, but not govli. You're not allowed to stir it or knead it together. V'ein noistin mayim lefnei dvorim lefnei yoinim shebeshovach. One is not to give water to bees nor to doves in a coop. Avol noistin lefnei avozim v'tarnegolim lefnei yoinei har di sios. But one is allowed to give water to avozim, sometimes translated as geese, and tarnegol and chickens, and yoni hardesios are the type of they're doves that one raises in his house. And as we said earlier in our shiur today, that animals that are under your control, that live in your home environment, those you are obligated to tend to. Those animals that are undomesticated and live in the wild, you don't tend to. Now, the Gemara. Before we learn the Gemara, let's just draw your attention once again to a chart that we've provided on the side. You can see we've called it a tavla, which is a chart or a table, like the word sounds. Across the top, you have two columns, mutter and osser. And down the side, you have the different animals featured, the gomel, egel, tarnegolim, and the yonei shovach aliyah. So now, our Gemara. My Ein Ovsin. The Mishnah said, Ein Ovsin es Hagomel. What is that? Omer of Yehuda, Ein Oisin lo Evus besoch mea. This is a rather descriptive idea of a large quantity of food. So we translate it, means you don't make an Evus. An Evus is like a trough, a feeding trough, inside, besoch mea, inside the animal's stomach. The Gemara asks, "Mi'iko ki haigavno? Is that possible that you would that so much food, the amount of a feeding trough would hold, can be put inside an animal?" So the Gemara answers, "In yes, uchen omar Rav Yirmiyah midifti." And as Rav Yirmiyah says, "Ledidi chazi li hahutaya. I once saw an Arab, the ochlo kura, that fed its animal, fed his camel a kur. Kur is a vast amount, a very large quantity of food." The atino kura, then loaded up on its back another kura for the trip. The part of the explanation for this is that the camel was a long distance a desert beast, means of transportation beast of burden, and so as to ensure that if you have an ample food supply, you could do this, and it's beneficial, so that it will keep a large food supply in its system for a long period of time. And this is not allowed to be done on Shabbos, though. Ein ma'amirin. The Mishnah had said, Ein ma'amirin eswa golem. So Esohi Hamra'ah, that's the word Mamirin. What is Hamra'ah, which is Osir? The Esohi Hal'ota, which is Mutter. The Mishnah said, Ein Mamirin, in section number 2 of the Mishnah, Ein Mamirin Sagolim Avol Mal'itin. So what is that which is prohibited, and what is that which is allowed? In order to answer this, we will see, and we bring this out with our markings. You see the double underline, which highlights Rav Yehuda, and then the next line, Rav Chisda. Rav Yehuda will be focusing on, in his explanation, he explains in terms of, let's say, destination of the food in the animal system. We wrote above Rav Yehuda, Moko. Moko means the location or the place of the food. Rav Chisda, he explains in the terms with a focus on method. So Rav Yehuda focuses on place, and Rav Chisda focuses on method. Well, this will become much clearer as we learn the Gemara. Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav Yehuda, Hamra'ah, which is forbidden, Lemokim She'eno Yecholo Lahachzir. It's shoving the food into the animal so deep into its system that it cannot bring it up. In other words, it's not just a function of putting it in its mouth where its teeth and tongue are, because that is a place that the animal could spit it out. So Hamra is a form of feeding, it's a location in the animal where it cannot bring it up. Hal'ota is lamokom shiyacholo lahachzir. It's not as far into the animal. It's a place that it can bring it back up. Rav Chisda, Omar, Rav Chisda, as we said, focuses on the method. Rav Chisda Omar, Idi v'Idi, both Hamra and Hal'ota, lemokon she'eno yecholo lahachzir. As far as mokom is concerned, it's both. They both are deep into the animal. V'Hamra b'kli, Hal'ota b'yad. Hamra is using a vessel, a type of Rashi calls a tarvit. A tarvit is a spoon, and Hamra and Hal'ota is by hand. Mosiv Rav Yosef. Notice we have a long question marking, indicating that a number of lines are needed here to develop this question. And we also have a double star, which draws your attention to a note that we have on the side of the Gemara. So there we've written He'ora, a point of note. Rav Yosef Makshe al Rav Yehuda. First of all, Rav Yosef will be focusing his question against Rav Yehuda. And you can see his opinion was marked with the double underline, just the two lines above, two, three lines up. He focused on location, that Hamra is in contrast to Halota by way of how deep into the animal. Kidei lahovin kushya soyesh kama nekudas. In order to appreciate this question, there are a couple of points. Lefi Rav Yehuda, Hamra, which is Osir, is lemokum she'eno yecholo lachzor. Number two, mehalkitin, by Betarnegolim, the term mehalkitin was seen in the Mishnah. That is, with regard to chickens, the equivalent of mal'itin by the egel, by the calf. In our Mishnah, we saw that mal'itin mal'itin was allowed by calves, and mehalkitin is allowed by chickens. And point three, im lemokim sheni yecholo lachzor is mutter. If that would be the case, that putting it in the animal to a point that it cannot bring something up would be allowed, so ma efshel le'asor, what would there be left to forbid? And to that we can answer the use of a vessel. This note is just to give a feeling of what to expect in the Gemara. And now let's focus on the text. Mosiv Rav Yosef. Mehalkitin l'tarnegolim v'ein tzorach lomar she malkitin. This is a Tanaic source, it's a Brisa, that says you're allowed to do mahalkitin, and the term mahalkitin we saw in the Mishnah as well. You're allowed to do that with tarnegolim, and it goes without saying you're allowed to malkitin. Of course, we have to wait for the Gemara to explain these words. V'ein malkitin l'yoynei shoivach u'l'yoynei aliyah. You're not allowed to do malkitin, which seemed to be a very lenient, very permissible thing, but you're not allowed to do malkitin with the yoynei shoivach or yoynei aliyah. These are the doves of a coop or doves that nestle in people's attics. They're more of a wild type variety, we'll say. The ein tzorach lomar she'ein mehalkitin, and all the more so, it's obvious that you're not allowed to do mehalkitin. My mehalkitin umay malkitin. What do these terms mean? E lema mehalkitin is desafi le biodayim, that mehalkitin is feeding by hand. And malkitin, feeding by hand means you offer the food by hand to the chicken or to the birds. And malkitin, deshodi le komaihu, and that malkitin would mean to just to scatter it in front of the birds. So if that's the case, ela deyoinei shevach v'yoinei aliyah, mishta komaihu nami lo. Are you not allowed just to scatter it in front of them? What tircha is there? There's no. What you're not. You're not extending yourself. You're not exerting yourself. So, to use the explanation of that we've offered just now to mahalkitin and malkitin won't hold up, because when you look at the prohibition regarding the Yoni Shavu Yoni Aliyah, the prohibition won't make sense. Ela lav, rather, we have to explain as follows: mehalkitin, which is allowed, lamokom she'eno yicholo lahachzir. I mean, feeding the chicken, we say, is allowed. That means feeding it to a point in the animal, in the chicken, that it can't bring back, can't bring it up. It's deep into it. Malkitin, which is more lenient thing, is lamokom shiyacholo lahachzir. It's not so deep into the chicken. Michlal, then, once again, we have to repeat what we said in our introductory note, that mehalkitin, with regard to the chicken, is the equivalent of mal'itin by the egel. Because right now we're going to go to an expression that we saw in the case of the egel, so this transition is important. So michlal de hamra, which is forbidden, equals bikli. That will not be allowed. Now that is like utiyuta de Rav Yehuda. This approach then would be unlike that of Rav Yehuda, and it would be like Rav Chista. Rav Chista is the one that said that as far as feeding it to a mokov sheinu yichol lahachzir, that is allowed, whether that which is forbidden is the use of a vessel. And that's what we see over here. Because according to Rav Yehuda, by feeding it to a point that it's eino yechol lahachzir, that would be forbidden. And as we just demonstrated in reading this source with the Gemara's explanation, feeding it to a point that it cannot bring it up is allowed. That is against Rav Yehuda. Omar loch Rav Yehuda. So he responds, the oilom mehalkitin is the Sofi Lei Biodayim. And we have to note that this also takes a few lines. It's a long answer. Rav Yehuda says that Mehalkitin, which is allowed, is a feeding by hand. Malkitin is the Shodi Lei Komayu. It's scattering it in front of them. And then regarding that, we had asked, but you can't scatter the food in front, the bird feed in front of these doves, these shovach doves and aliyah doves. The Gemara says, that's right, you're not allowed to do that. Hani mizanesan alecha, the chickens you are obligated to feed. They're your possession. They're domesticated, live within your home environment. The honey, the other yoine shevich and yoine aliyah, ein mezaynosan olechay. You're not obligated to see to their food provision. Kidisanya, as the following source illustrates, noisin mezaynos lifnei kelev, v'ein noisin mezaynos lifnei chazir. You feed a dog, you don't feed a pig. Of course, we're talking on Shabbos. Uma hefresh bein zeh lezeh. What's the difference between the two? Zeh mezaynosav olecha. The dog is an animal that you have to care for. Without your care, it won't have food. Zeh ein mezaynosav olecha. Regarding the pig, you're not obligated to care for it. Now, Rashi adds here, interestingly, regarding the pig, chazir ein mezaynosav olecha, the Orur Yehudi Shigad El Chazirim. There's a curse upon Jews that raise pigs. You're not supposed to have them in the first place. You'll notice that we have a bracketed section. This bracketed section is actually quite long. We have a bracket length indicator to show you how long it is. And furthermore, you might want to note that in this long bracketed section, there's a sub-bracket, and we will attempt to explain this as we get to these points. But initially, let us skip the long bracketed section, and you'll see what that leads you to. Tanyo Kavose de Rav Yehuda. After we just learned in the Gemara, we learned how Rav Yehuda responded, defending his position, defending his whole approach, that the prohibition is when you use a vessel in feeding the animal, and the prohibition is not based on the location of the food in the animal, how far you put it in. And this Tanya Kavasu Yehuda is a Tanaic source supporting his explanation that a hamra, in fact, is also an example of feeding it to a place that it can't bring it back up. It's deep into it. As Rav Yehuda had explained, Rav Yehuda had said Rav Yehuda had said that Hamra, if you go back to the earlier part of the Gemara where the double underlined Rav Yehuda appears, he said Hamra is Lamokum Sheni Yechola Lahachzir. And that's what we will see in the source that follows the long bracketed section. Let us now go back to the beginning of the bracketed section. Omar Ravashi, Masnisin Nami Daiko. Careful reading of the Mishnah will bear out the explanation we just gave, which was in effect a defense of the Rav Yehuda's position that regarding the Mahalkitin and the Malkitin, that Malkitin meant this scattering the bird feed, and as far as why you can't do that with the Yoni Shevich and the Yoni Aliyah, because Ein Mezonoson Alech, and that we'll be able to bear that point out by careful reading of the Mishnah. Again, we're reading from the beginning of the bracketed section. Omer Rav Ashi Masnisin Amitaiko. It said in our Mishnah regarding the water, Ein noisin mayim lifnei dvorim lifnei yoinim shevishovach. We don't give water to bees nor to the coop doves. Avol noisin lifnei avozim lifnei tarnigolim lifnei yoinei har disios. The Gemara goes on, Mai taimo, Why is that? Lav mishum dahani mezonoson olecha vahani ein mezonoson olecha. The distinction is because the ones that you are feeding are because you are obligated to tend to their food needs. The ones that you're not allowed to give the water to is because you are not obligated to their food needs. The Gemara now rejects this. It rejects the explanation of the Mishnah based on this mizonoson alecha approach. Uvitamech, according to you, Ma'ir Yamaya, if the Mishnah is the contrast between the different animals that we just dashed underlined. We have on the one hand Dvorim and Yone Shofach on one side, and you've got the Avozim and Tarnagodim and Yonahadius on the other side. If the distinction is simply because of the issue of mezonos and alecha, why does it talk about water? Afilu chiti usairi namilo. Even wheat and barley would be the same. In other words, you wouldn't be able to give wheat and barley to the dvorim and the yonim sheba shoivoch. Ela, shiny maya. Water is different. Food is not common. Water is very common. The shchichi ba'agmo. It's very common out there in the ponds and the marshes. However, food is not so shachiach. It's not so common. And therefore, since the Mishnah emphasized water, which is a common element, it could be then that when it comes to food, which is less common, it would be mutter to give that to the dvorim and the yonei shoivach. So, just to go over the structure of what we just saw in the Gemara, is Rav Ashi tried to bring a proof to Rav Yehuda's approach to the understanding of the Mishnah, and then that was just the Rav Ashi's support was pushed aside just now. At this point, though, once again, if you skip to the section after these angular brackets, we see the Gemara nevertheless saying Tanyo Kavose de Rav Yehuda, that we have a Braisa that supports Rav Yehuda's approach, who explained the word Hamro'o as putting food into an animal to a point so deep into its system that it can't bring it back up. So, again, after having emphasized numerous times the structure of the Gemara, let's now continue in the bracketed section. Here are the angular brackets. Dorash Rabbi Yoino Apischa de Beinasia. Here, this we've entitled this on the side as a subtopic, tat nose. We'll be talking about the food of dogs. So Rabbi Yoino, the darshan, he held forth, he lectured Apischa de Beinasia at the entrance to the Nasi's house. Nasi was the leader of the Jewish community. Mai dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk of Yoda Tzadik Bein Din Dalim? What is that? Yodea Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is aware, Bekelev, concerning the dog, Shemezeinosov Mu'otin. It doesn't have much food. Rashi says, She'ein Odom Chos Olav Lo Seis Lo Mezonos Harbe. People don't have much compassion for dogs. Let us assume right now we're talking about dogs that are unowned. So, Kodesh Baruch Hu knows that about dogs. Lefikach She'ech Yilosu B'me'ov Shloshi Yomim. Therefore, food inside a dog system doesn't become fully digested till 3 days go by. In other words, the food that a dog eats, the little food that it eats, it doesn't become digested rapidly. So he has even a limited food supply will provide nutrition for the dog for a long period of time. Kedisnan, and here we bring a Tanaic source which illustrates from a halachic perspective this idea about food lasting a long time in the dog system. In order to appreciate this, though, a little bit of background is necessary, and I think Rashi is the best way to achieve this. Let's take a look at the Rashi, just a couple lines up from here. Kamo tisha b'me'ov. How long must food last in the dog? Sha'adakelev shocha boser meis. Imagine a dog ate human corpse meat. Umeis hakelev bebayis. And then the dog died. The dog itself died in a house. That means for the first 3 days, if the dog died within 3 days of having eaten that human corpse meat, there will be tumas oihel. If the dog died more than 3 days later, so whatever it ate is considered fully digested and loses its identity of corpse meat. And human flesh is a source of what's called tumas oihel. It's a tuma that's experienced by being under the same roof as the human flesh. So that if the dog ate human corpse flesh and died within 3 days, that human corpse flesh is considered intact. Even though it's inside the dog, but the dog is dead, and the human corpse flesh penetrates, the tumah that is, penetrates the dog and fills the entire house. Rashi adds another point, which is tangential, but it's worth knowing. Avol b'chayov, a dog that's alive, that happens to be walking around after having eaten human flesh, dead human flesh, lo mitamet. There is no tumah that emanates. The tumah blua b'bali chayim, lo mitamet. A tumah that's absorbed in living animals does not radiate outwards. So let us now turn back to the Gemara with that background. We pointed out the Kodesh Baruch Hu's compassion for dogs in preserving the food inside a dog for 3 days. Kidisnan, kamo tisha chilosu b'me'a v'yetome, how long would food tarry inside, be delayed or continue to be inside the dog and still be a source of tumah? So, bekelev, we should say, first not just the dog, we're talking in general, and now there's a breakdown. Bekelev, Gimel Yomim Me'es Le'es, that within a 3 day period, Me'es Le'es means 24 hours, so it's 3 times 24, which is within 72 hours, if the dog died within 72 hours of having eaten human corpse flesh, there will be Tumas Ohel experience. The food is still intact. The human corpse flesh inside the dog is still intact. When it comes to birds and fish, food does not remain intact inside these creatures for very long. Just enough time for it to fall into a fire, so to speak, and get burnt up. Just as a matter of minutes. So that if imagine a fish, let's say a shark, ate some human flesh, and then or a vulture ate some human flesh, and then the vulture died, let's say 2 hours later, there will be no tumas oil because of the human corpse meat that might be inside the bird, because it's considered already consumed. Omar Rav Hamnuna, Shema Mino, from this Gemara we learn, Orach Ara, its proper behavior, it's called Derech Eretz, Lemishta Umtsa Lekaba, to throw a piece of meat to a dog. As we said before, the Kodesh Baruch Hu shows his compassion for dogs, so we too ought to do the same. The comma, how much? When you say throw a piece of meat to a dog, how much? Omar of Mori, Meshach Udnei, V'chutra Abasrei. Meshach is a measure, whereas the length of its ear means a very small amount. And then have a chutra means a stick. Have a stick in your hand to give the dog a whack so that it doesn't follow you around. In other words, do something in addition to the food, offer some type of deterrent to the dog that it shouldn't follow you around. Hani mili bedabra. This is true with regard to the fields. When you're in the fields and you meet up with a dog, avo b'masa lo. But in town, don't. The osi lemisrach. It's very likely that it's going to follow you around. And Rashi says v'yafsido, and it's going to end up costing you a lot. Omar Rav Papa, leis de anyo mikalbo v'les de osir mikhazira. There's no animal that's more impoverished than a dog, and none that's richer than a pig. What is the association of wealth with a pig? So Rashi says, leis de osir mikhazira doch shekol maichol roi lo, umoitzi lechol v'af machilin lo harbei. Everything is edible for a pig, and it finds, and people also feed them a lot. You can see that the whole bracketed section comes to an end over here, and we hopefully gave sufficient introduction to this to appreciate Tanya Kavosi Dervuda, and we also wrote in between the lines that we're bringing a Tanaic support to Rav Yehuda that we had seen quite a bit earlier, that the word Hamro'ah is a reference to the feeding of an animal into its system to a point that it cannot bring the food back. This was in contrast, by the way, to Rav Chisda's approach to Hamra, that Hamra meant Bekli. The source. Ezo hi Hamra, vi ezo hi Hal'ota. What do these terms mean? Hamra is Marbitza, it's to throw the animal groundwards, to lay it down. Upoikes espia, that's a type of force opening of its mouth with a type of peg that you put into its mouth that it can't close it. Umachilo karshinin umayim bevasachas. And you feed it karshinim, a type of called animal grains and water in one shot. Halota is Ma'achilo me'umod, umashke me'umod. You feed it while it's standing, give it to drink while it's standing. V'noisim kashinim v'fnei atzmon, umayim v'fnei atzmon. And you give it the kashinim by itself and the mayim by itself. The Rashi adds that which is really the most important. Rashi says, umachilo, machilo kashinim mayim v'basachas. The water mixing with the kashinim forces it down into its digestive system. The next Rashi, Machila Mu'umad, he points out at the end of that particular Dibor Maschil, we dashed underline the two words, v'yochol lachzira. In that case, it's able to bring it back up. So that the feeding method described under Hamra is in contrast to that, where it cannot bring it back up. Mehalkitin l'tarnegoylim, u'v'noisin mayim l'morsan. Omer Abaye, Amriso Kamei Demor, I asked, Rabbi says, I asked more, which is generally speaking, Rabba, Masnisin Moni, the Mishnah that says that you can add water to the Morsan, and we don't say that the mere addition to the Morsan is considered its kneading. Kneading on Shabbos is a forbidden activity. Our Mishnah allows the adding of water to the morsan, the bran. So the mere addition, the pouring of the water into the bran, doesn't constitute its kneading. Who holds like that? The Omar Li and Rabba Mor answered me, Rabbi Yosi B'Yudahi. It's in accordance with Rabbi Yosi B'Yudah, the Sanya. We have a Tanaic source in which Rabbi Yosi B'Yudah appears at the end of it. The source says, Echad Noisin es HaKemach v'Echad Noisin L'Soichi Mayim. If one puts flour into a bowl and someone else comes and pours water into the flour, Achron Chayov Divrei Rebbe. The one who poured the water in is guilty of a Shabbos violation. Rebbe holds that the pouring of the water is the equivalent of its kneading. Rabbi Yosi B'Yudah Omer Eino Chayov Ad Sheyigbal. Rabbi Yosi B'Yudah says that the mere adding of the water does not result in a Shabbos violation. Violation is not achieved until one needs it. So, from this source, Rabba explained that our Mishnah, which says you're allowed to put water into Morsan, is based on Rabbi Yosi B'Yudah. The Gemara tries to reject this. Dilma, maybe ad kan lekum Rabbi Yosi B'Yudah hosam elo kemach. Maybe Rabbi Yosi B'Yudah's leniency was with regard to flour, debar, gibel, hu. It is something that ordinarily is kneaded, and therefore if you don't do the kneading process, you haven't violated Shabbos. Avo musan delav bar gibel hu, but musan bran, which is not something you ordinarily knead. In other words, its last stage in preparation is the water that's added to it. You don't do anything after that. So either Rabbi Yosi Yehuda Moida, maybe Rabbi Yosi Yehuda will concede that the adding of the water is itself something forbidden. In other words, it wouldn't be allowed. And then we'd be back at square one. Our Mishnah that says you are allowed to add the water would be based on whom? Loi salka daitoch. Don't think like we just suggested. The Sanya Behedyo, we have an explicit source that says, Ein noisen mayim morsen to be Rebbe, Rabbi Yosi Rebbe de Omer, noisen mayim lemorsen. And we dashed underline this. You can see very clearly that Rabbi Yosi Yehuda allows the adding of water to the morsen, showing us that just like he held with regard to the kemach, that adding the water to the kemach, to the flour, did not constitute a Shabbos violation, so too, adding water to the morsen is something that is okay. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Govlin es Hakoli, V'yesh Omrim Govlin. Koli is flour that is prepared from grains that were roasted first in an oven, and then after the grains were roasted, they were ground into flour, and it's a sweet type. It has a sweet taste to it. Rashi points out at the bottom that this is known as kemach de avshuna, the oisin mimenu shesisa mishemnu mayim umelach shem avribo, and the shesisa, called the beverage, is made from this kind of flour that's mixed with oil, water, and salt. In this source, we see the Yesh Omrim says you're allowed to mix it, you're allowed to, Govlin is to knead it. Man Yesh Omrim, who is that? Omar Rav Chista, Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda, he. This is in accordance with Rav Yosi Yehuda that said before that with regard to the flour and water, there is no chiyuv, there's no violation until you are megabel. In other words, he was a more lenient approach. Now, here, in this source, it says you are allowed to govlin. Now, that needs explanation. So the Gemara explains, Vahani mili hu de meshani. It's this allowance of the govlin es hakoli, the stirring or the kneading of the koli that we described earlier, is if you do it in a different, a mishani, is you do it in a changed way. Well, hechi mishani, how do you do that in the changed way? Omar of Chista, al yad. So if you do that in the al yad method, so then it will be okay. Now, in this term, al yad is not explained directly by the Rashi, but if we look in the on the second line from the top in the Rashi, he says de Omar. This is Rabbi Yosi Yehuda who said de Omar ad shigabel, that there's no violation with regard to adding water to flour until you are megabel, until you need it. Hocha goivlin kilachar yad. Here you are goivlin the koli if you do it in an unusual way. Can enforce viozil, as it explains here in the Gemara, v'hani mili hu de komeshani, as it says, if you do it in an unusual way. The term al yad we see elsewhere, meaning in small quantities. So let us assume for the time being that that's the explanation. However, the main point for us is to realize that it's a shinui, it's something unusual. The Gemara will continue with, according, we have a frame around the next two lines of Gemara. According to the Ritva, this is a continuation of the Brisa that we saw earlier. So we, with that in mind, we continue. Veshavin shebochashin es hashosis. And once we saw an argument regarding the koli, shavin means they agree with regard to the stirring. The bochashin is to stir with a spoon, which is like govlin, es hashosis b'shabbos, that you're allowed to stir this food item, shosis, and v'shoisim zesum hamitzri, and you're allowed to drink zesum hamitzri. Rashi, the point here is that it's not viewed as a remedy, even though people drink the zesum hamitzri for therapeutic purposes. Rashi points out that even without that consideration, it is a drink. We should point out that the source, as we mentioned earlier, was a continuation. I think we already mentioned that the shavin means there is agreement. Other point I want to emphasize is that in this source, when it says shebocha shenes hashosis, this was the shesisa that we read earlier in the Rashi at the bottom of Omid Beis. So that even though there's no continuity, so to speak, in the source, nevertheless, we, with the markings and according to the Rifah, this is, represents really a continuation of that source. The Gemara asks, how can this source say that there's agreement, shebochashin es hashosis, and we explained that the shosis was that koli that we saw at the bottom of the previous Omid Beis, for Amris Ein Govlin, but bochashin, Rashi says on the second line from the top is govlin, but how can you say that when we said before at the bottom of Kuf Nun Hei Omid Beis that one is not allowed to do that? They said Ein Govlin. In order to help you find things a little more easily, we have provided a little star to the side of the Gemara text indicating Kuf Nun Hei Omid Beis. And if you look at the bottom line of Kuf Nun Hei Omid Beis, you'll see a parallel star indicating Kuf Nun Vav Omid Aleph, where we are. So how can you say that in this source that there's agreement shebochashin es hashosis, when there we saw that it's forbidden? Lo kashya, no problem, no question. Ha b'ova ha b'raka. If it's thick, then we say ein govlin. If it's liquidy, then we say bochashin. You're allowed to bochashin. We mean to stir it. V'hani milihu demeshani. That's provided you do it in a shinui way, in a changed way. Hechi meshani. How is that accomplished? Omar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef explains. He tells you that the normal way is such and such, and then he'll tell us on Shabbos how you do the shinui. So Omar Rav Yosef. Bechol, during the weekdays, noisin es hachoy mitzvah hachach noisin es hashosis. In the weekdays, you first pour in the vinegar, the chometz, and then you add the other ingredients. As we saw, the ingredients were explained by Rashi at the bottom of Kuf Nun Hamid Beis. B'Shabbos, noisin es hashosis v'achakach noisin es hachoymetz. On Shabbos, you change the order, and that constitutes the shinui. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.